it difficult for you to talk about an unusual experience you've had? Perhaps you've had a vision of some kind, a notable instance of premonition, intuition, or ESP, that word the skeptics detest. Maybe you've seen a ghost or suspect that you've had communication from a loved one who has passed on, but you're reluctant to talk about it, even with those who are close to you. You're afraid they won't believe you. You don't want to be labeled as a person with an overactive imagination, or worse yet, a nutcase. Nor do you want to be referred to your local shrink for a double dose of Prozac. Well, welcome to the show that says, bring it on, baby. You're definitely not alone. Hello, this is Carla Wills Brandon, and you are about to take a walk to the other side. It's just me, my cat, and a good cup of tea, and downstairs, the guys are all flaked out. It's really hot here. It's very hot here on Galveston Island. You can email me at any time, or you can call toll-free at 1-888-268-4313 if you have a question or a comment. Also, gang, don't be so shy. Email me at drsbrandon@sbcglobal.net. I'd love to hear from you. I know a few of you have emailed me, and you've had some excellent questions. Most of us don't know where to turn to talk about this stuff. We go to the bookstore, we walk into like a Barnes and Nobles, and we're overwhelmed with the amount of information there is. We go online and we surf the web, and we get one side, and then we get another side, and then we sit there and we go, ah, so what's what? Well, according to a 2002 CBS poll, believe it or not, most believe in psychic phenomena. This poll was done in April of 2002, and I thought it was really surprising coming from CBS, you know, like mainstream media. They always diss anything that has to do with the paranormal, or they want to joke around about it, or they want to, you know, invite some skeptic to come on and slam it. Well, a majority of Americans, get this, 57% say they believe in psychic phenomena such as, there's that word again, ESP, or extrasensory perception, telepathy, or experiences that can't be explained by normal means. And these experiences, as I've told you guys over and over and over again, they are nothing new. Believe it or not, this is interesting too. Religion plays a role in people's opinions about psychic phenomena. Two-thirds of those who identify themselves as Catholic say that psychic phenomena occur, compared to only 52% of Protestants and other religions. You know what was really curious? Some of you may have watched that show on HBO called Big Love, about the Mormon family and polygamy, and it's a very curious show. When my book came out, the first book on Deathbed Visions came out, One Last Hug Before I Go, I got a lot of requests, believe it or not, from radio shows out of Salt Lake City, because the near-death experience is something that's readily accepted within the Mormon community. And there are other religions that also accept some of these unusual occurrences that everyday people are having. Interestingly, there are some differences with regard to education. Now, we've also talked about this. One would think, listening to mainstream media, listening to the skeptics, that only those people who are superstitious, uneducated, would believe in paranormal activity. And that is just, according to this poll, a bunch of hoo-ha-ha. Some 60 to 54% of those who believe have at least some college education, and these individuals are slightly more likely to say psychic phenomena occur more so than those with less education. And the age group, even though the youngsters out there are watching Medium, and on Medium, of course, when the dearly departed come back, they've either been hacked or they've got, you know, bullet wounds in them, or they look just terrible. They look horrible. And Ghost Whisperer, too. I mean, those poor folks who play the dearly departed, they must have to sit in the makeup chair for a bazillion years to look that awful. I'm going to tell you guys something. Every person I have interviewed who has had an experience with an apparition of a departed loved one has never shared with me that their departed loved one looks so terrible. Actually, what they tend to say is that in these apparitions, in these visitations, with these visions, their dearly departed one looks better than they did before they passed. Those between the ages of 45 and 64 are the age group most likely to say they have had a psychic encounter. But don't get me wrong, because I've received some incredible encounters from the younger generations who, there's something about being involved with a lot of the video games, the younger generation that was exposed to the video games, the different realities within cyberspace. Some of these folks seem to be much more open to the idea that this reality that we're all involved in right here, right now, isn't the only game in town. Now, all of us are familiar with the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. We can't escape elementary school without hearing about the great emancipator and how he was gunned down at a theater by the unsavory John Booth. Oh, I just got 20 questions shot at me last month from my 12-year-old who wanted to know, who was John Booth? Why did he shoot Lincoln? Isn't that mean? Why did he do that? They were studying Lincoln. Though we're all aware of this famous tragedy, how many of us know, and I bet a bunch of us don't know, that Lincoln had a strange dream about his death several days before he was assassinated? How many of you guys know this? In the book Abraham Lincoln, The Man Behind the Myth, 1994, by Stephen B. Oates, this dream, as it was related to Lincoln's friend, Will Hill Lamone, is described as follows. This was so incredible to me that I put it in, I actually included it in One Last Tug. There seemed to be, this is Lincoln's dream, okay? We're all on the same page here. There seemed to be a death-like stillness about me. Then I heard subdued sobs, as if a number of people were weeping. I thought I left my bed and wandered downstairs. I went from room to room. The same mournful sounds of distress met me as I passed along. I kept on until I arrived at the East Room at the White House, which I entered. There I met with a sickening surprise. Before me was, it looks like he's describing some sort of table or something, on which rested, I'm kind of breezing through, a corpse. Who is dead in the White House? I demanded of one of the soldiers. The president was the answer. He was killed by an assassin. Now, this is Lincoln having this dream before his assassination. Then there came a loud burst of grief from the crowd, which awoke me from my dream. I slept no more that night, and although it was the only dream, it was only a dream, I have been strangely annoyed by it ever since. So, did President Lincoln have a deathbed vision about his own assassination? Was this a warning or just a fluke? I don't think so. What about you? Here's what I want you guys to do. I want you guys to ponder on this, think about this a little bit, and if you think that President Lincoln had a deathbed vision in dream form, why don't you email me at drsbrandon, drsbrandon, at sbcglobal.net. We'll take a sort of very unscientific poll here. If you think it was something else, if you think it was just a fluke, go ahead and tell me why you think it was a fluke. So that's drsbrandon at sbcglobal.net. Okay, so here we have a premonition. A deathbed vision, believe it or not, is a type of premonition. Let's take a look at something else a little more interesting here. This is from ghostvillage.com, and it was written by a woman named Laura. She doesn't want her name shared, the rest of her name shared, but she's from California, and basically what she writes is, my son's father passed away early in 1998. Although our relationship had ended about 3 years earlier, we had a strong connection and remained close friends. Isn't that something? Most people, when they get a divorce, they want to kill each other. You should come sit in my shoes for about a week. I get these people, they come in, they absolutely want to kill each other. 2 days before his death, I had felt predicted some sort of imminent danger surrounding him. Now, I want to talk about this real quick. In my history, what happens for me when somebody is getting ready to die, or when they are in the process of dying, is I will all of a sudden get very moody. I will feel very depressed. I'll feel incredibly sad. And then, and it's just like a, you know, I can be on top of the world and life is great and, things are just peachy keen. And then for no reason at all, ba-boom, I feel like I'm just going to, you know, sink into the depths of some sort of clinical depression. And it's like, get the Zoloft. And shortly after that, I will receive a phone call announcing the death of someone who's close to me. Okay, back to this letter. I had desperately tried warning him directly. She was feeling strange, as well as going to his family for help, knowing that it could be hard for others to take me seriously or that I may simply come across as a real nut. Then I dreamt about speaking at someone's funeral. When I woke up, I remembered that I had been very emotional, but I did not have a clue as to who had died. Now, I worked with a woman a number of years ago, right before her husband overdosed. She had a dream. She had these, she called them her coffin dreams. She had a series of dreams about walking up to a coffin and looking in the coffin and not being able to see who it was who had passed on. But there are people, and maybe you're one of them, who have these sort of premonitions before there's a passing, either in dreams or you have a sensation or a feeling or something doesn't feel right. None of the people in attendance seem to have had actual faces. There we go again. They were sort of generic, like characters in some Twilight episode. That's brilliant. Also, an hour or so after, I awoke and I received a phone call from my son's grandmother telling me that my little boy's dad had died. So she had a premonition. She had, that is, gang, that's the type of departing vision. He had been found about an hour earlier. When I did say a few words at his memorial, there were only a few faces that I recognized. I could hardly see anything at all through my tears. However, the real encounter occurred a little more than a year later. Now we're moving into an after-death communication. As I was getting ready to go to sleep one night, my boyfriend came back upstairs after getting a glass of water. He looked like he was shivering, and as he got closer to me, I could see that he had goosebumps, and it was in the late summer. And this is a guy who wears T-shirts and shorts all through winter. Boy, that sounds like my hubby. He said there was something he felt in the living room. Have you ever had that sensation? A loved one has moved on, and you feel something. You feel like somebody is there. And you maybe you even turn and you look, and there is nobody there. That he passed through some cold spot. Now, paranormal investigators have been talking and yapping about this on the Learning Channel with all of these Ghostbuster groups that go into these, quote, haunted houses looking for spirit activity. And they talk a lot about cold spots. And the thought is, if there's a cold spot, that means that a spirit is basically, you know, taking energy out of the environment. And so that's why it's cold. Or maybe it passed through him. He was finally able to fall asleep after a while, but I just continued to lie there in the pitch black a while longer, waiting for sleep to come. It was after maybe 45 minutes that I heard a voice, soft and not threatening in itself, but it just pierced right through that darkness. It couldn't have been more than about 5 feet away from me as it spoke one word, "Hi!" Imagine you're in your bed. Nobody else is there, and all of a sudden you hear a hi. I was frozen solid and looked all around, but I couldn't see anything anywhere. My eyes hurt as I strained to see something. My heart was beating harder than ever, and I was literally scared stiff. We're going to talk about this in a second, how we're all so damn scared of the unknown. I knew I hadn't imagined it. The voice was crystal clear, and I had most definitely heard it through my ears. Then again, I heard that same calm voice saying, "Oh, I'm so sorry." I recognized at that time it was my son's father apologizing for scaring me, and then he was gone. I sure wish I had immediately recognized his voice. I've gotten many signs over the last few years, but I haven't heard a word from him since. fear initially kept this woman from recognizing her ex's voice. And here we have a case of the dearly departed apologizing for this. So why are we, as a society, so fearful of, quote, those things that go bump in the dark? Why are we so afraid of ghosts? You know, I have to sit with my son. He watches one of those goofy shows on television where the ghosts, the dearly departed, they come back and they're just, they're all green and white in color and their clothes are raggedy and they've been shot and they're, and he is scared. He gets scared stiff, and I have to say to him, honey, that's not the way it is. That is Hollywood. It is seriously not the way it is. And I have had encounters, and I have seen apparitions, and I have to say to him, Mama has seen ghosts, and they don't look that way. So should you be afraid of ghosts? That word, I don't know, that word even bothers me. Well, my buddy Stephen Wagner, I've talked to you about him before from About Paranormal. All you have to do is plug in About Paranormal into your search engine. You can go straight to his site and go ahead and sign up for his free newsletter. He wrote a wonderful piece on why people are afraid of ghosts. Do you fear the spirit world? Is that fear justified? The ghost phenomenon has become so closely associated with the instinct of fear that it's almost a given that, if asked, most people would admit that, of course, they would be frightened if they encountered an apparition. I was at a board meeting, gang, a boring board meeting, a very boring board business meeting thing. And this friend of mine, you know, of course, pulls me aside and sits me down. And this guy's a physician. I mean, he's a bright, you know, went to Vanderbilt. This is a bright guy, and he sits me down. And he tells me about an after-death communication that a friend of his had. And so I suggested to him that he investigate a little bit about what these are, what after-death communications are. And I've talked to him before. And he is scared stiff of anything that has to do with ghosts. And he will readily admit it. And he said to me, you know I'm scared to death of ghosts. And I said, honey, we're going to have to change that. Even many seasoned ghost investigators have been known to run like scared rabbits when they see or even hear something unexpected. But why? Why have ghosts really earned the reputation of being harmful to humans? If you are walking unarmed in a dense tropical jungle that you know is inhabited by tigers and large snakes, you'd undoubtedly be petrified. The threat to your life and well-being is quite real. Well, that's that, you know, fight or flight thing we've all got going on. And your fear is very justifiable. So, like, if I go downstairs, gang, and my front door is open and there's nobody there, I'm going to feel a rush of adrenaline. And that fear is not an unhealthy thing. Fear, healthy fear, tells us, okay, be on alert, take care of business, don't be a dummy, and act like nothing's happening. Because, well, and what Stephen is saying, tigers and snakes, they can and they do kill. Okay, now place yourself alone at night in a house that has been, or has the reputation for being haunted. Most people would probably experience the same fear. Yet according to most authorities on the subject, the fear is not justified. Hallelujah! Somebody else is saying it. Ghosts, by and large, are harmless. And you know what? They are. I have not had a spirit attack me or throw anything at me. I mean, I've had a few pictures fall off the walls, and they messed with my electrical stuff. We had a clock downstairs that just got reset, and I've talked to everybody about resetting it. It's one of those clocks that it's a pressure clock, so it's very difficult to reset, and it hasn't worked for a year. And it started working last week, and actually, when it started working, it was set at the correct time. Michael's been playing with it forever, trying to get it to work, so who knows. The true behavior of ghosts is evidenced by many thousands of investigations and case studies conducted by paranormal experts. Overwhelmingly contradicts the common idea that they are to be feared. The veteran ghost investigator, this guy writes some great books, Hans Holzer, H-O-L-Z-E-R. In his book, Ghost: True Encounters with the World Beyond, Publisher is Black Dog and Leventhal, and this is the date on this is 1997, emphasizes, okay, the need to forget a popular notion that they are always dangerous, fearful, and hurt people. This is what he's saying about ghosts. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Ghosts have never harmed anyone except through fear found within the witness. This is according to his research. Of his own doing and because of his own ignorance as to what the ghost represents. Another respected ghost hunter of many years agrees, Lloyd Auerbach. In many cultures and religions around the world, ghosts are thought to harbor ill will towards the living. This is unfortunate since the evidence from thousands of cases suggests that people don't change their personalities or motivation after death. So basically what he's saying, gang, is, you know, if you hate broccoli on this side, when you go to the afterlife, you're still going to hate broccoli. If you were sweet and loving in this life, you're going to be sweet and loving in the next life. If you're inquisitive in this life, you'll be inquisitive in the next life. So, nor do they turn evil. So when we pass, we don't suddenly grow horns and look all raggedy and become our whole deal is about going out there and scaring our beloved ones. So his book, Ghost Hunting, How to Investigate the Paranormal, Ronin Publishing, 2004. So there's two good books for you guys to read. So the roots of fear. So why do we fear them? There are probably two main reasons. Do you know that there is a word for fear of ghosts? And it's called spectrophobia. I can't wait to tell my friend that he suffers from spectrophobia or plasmophobia. Most obviously stems from our fear of the unknown. So these are actually defining clinical terms for people who are fearful of ghosts. This is a deep-seated fear that is hardwired into our genetic makeup. The primitive part of our brain that responds to instinct, a holdover from our cave-dwelling ancestors, flushes our body with adrenaline when we encounter a threat. Remember, we just talked about this, preparing us to fight or flee. And when that threat is something unknown, that something unknown might leap out of the darkness, we just as soon flee. There's another component to this fear when that something in the dark is perceived as a ghost. After all, a ghost is a manifestation of a person who is dead. So now we are confronted not only with what we think is a threat to our lives, but a representation of death itself. So many of us are so incredibly death-phobic. And because we're so death-phobic, we don't want to see ghosts. Not only is it an entity that we don't understand, it's also a resident of a place many of us fear the most, the mysterious land of the dead. If you fear death, you cannot live life. The second main reason we fear ghosts is that we have been further conditioned to do so by popular culture. Almost without exception, books, movies, and television shows portray ghosts as evil, capable of mischief, injury, even death. If the media are to be believed, ghosts actually enjoy scaring us out of our wits. What Hollywood and television portray is very inaccurate and cannot be relied upon as truthful, say, Lewis and Sharon Guru of the Philadelphia Ghost Hunters Alliance in their article, Coexistence. They show these spirits of the dead as being evil in nature. This is Hollywood, filled with malice and harmful intent. I assure you, this is not the case. So those of you who have had some encounters and, you know, you've been scared, when you get scared, what do you think happens? Well, when you get scared and you react in fear, you're going to cut off the experience. Creepy, rotting, vengeful ghosts may make exciting movies, but they have very little basis in actual experience. As I shared with you, I have never seen a creepy, rotting ghost. Ghosts and haunting phenomena are harmless, okay? If you have someone, if you're a practical joker in this life, what's to say you're not going to be a practical joker in the afterlife? As much as they may unnerve and mystify us, there is really nothing to fear. Haunting phenomena seem to be recorded. Now listen to this, okay? Haunting phenomena. different from contact with a consciousness from the other side. This is haunting phenomena. These are two separate things. Seem to be recordings of past events on a particular environment. This is why haunted houses can't play back the recordings of footsteps on a stairway. In my old office, we had footsteps on the stairway, you know, constantly. There were footsteps. Of course, we also did have a resident from the afterlife there, but a lot of times what you'll find in places that are considered haunted is you'll have an imprint of past behavior, for example, or even the voices of an argument that took place many years previously. Years ago, I went to a castle in Scotland, and I went down into the dungeon. And I had a vision of a man in chains screaming at the top of his voice. And I got out of there as quickly as I could. It scared me. It absolutely scared me. This was before I made peace with my own mess. And I went up into the lobby of the museum that was near the castle, and lo and behold, there was a picture of what I had seen. Well, what I discovered years later was that this was most likely a haunting phenomenon. This was an imprint. This was an emotional experience. Here you have this poor guy chained to the wall being tortured. The emotions are intense, and this experience is imprinted in that dungeon. True ghosts or spirit apparitions may be earthly manifestations of those who have passed on. They are sometimes able to interact with the living and relay messages, okay? In either case, does the paranormal pose any real threat? Voices captured through electronic voice phenomena, EVP techniques, can at times be rude and even downright abusive. But again, there is no real threat or harm. So people who go into prisons and they do electronic voice phenomena recordings, and then they get these recordings that are really rude and they're really and they're even abusive. Well, it's in a frickin' prison. What do they expect to get? Hello, I love you? So then, how do we explain those rare cases in which a person is apparently scratched, slapped, or even bitten by some unseen entity? Such instances have been documented in the famous Bell Witch case. Sorry about that. The Esther Cox case, and the terrifying The Entity case, which the film was based on. These cases and others in which people are attacked and objects are thrown around are considered by most researchers today as poltergeist activity. Although poltergeist means noisy spirit, current parapsychology theory suggests that they are not spirits or ghosts at all. Poltergeist activity is psychokinetic activity caused by a living person. Usually that person is a teenager undergoing hormonal changes or someone under extreme emotional or psychological stress. I will tell you that when I have been in really, really bad places and very, very overwhelmed with emotion, it's not uncommon for things to fall off the walls or for lights to go out. That is not an unusual experience, and on down the line, we'll do a whole show on that. So what we generally consider the scariest aspects of ghosts, objects moving by themselves, TVs turning on, pounding on walls, and very rarely a person being injured are most likely caused by the unconscious working of a living human mind. Now, I don't totally agree with that, because I do think that oftentimes with after-death communications, the dearly departed are really working hard at getting our attention, and they will play around with electrical equipment. So, yeah, TVs will go on and off, radios will go on and off. My next-door neighbor's alarm went on and off. For those of us researching ghosts and haunting phenomena, we must resist our fearful instincts in the face of the unknown. Fear, listen, gang, fear can only inhibit our examination and understanding of one of the most intriguing aspects of the human experience. So, when I have an experience with the unknown and I feel my adrenaline begin to race through my body and I begin to feel fear, what I do is I close my eyes, and what I say to myself is, what can I learn from this? What is it I'm supposed to be learning from this? What I do is I just say it over and over again, and I imagine my blood pressure lowering. Works every single time. So Laura, who sent us her delightful email, had a premonition of her ex-husband's upcoming passing. But because of our society, thanks to Hollywood and the fundamentalists, my friends and yours, these individuals have shaped our consciousness with regard to afterlife activity. I had a client in today who is really struggling with the fundamentalist upbringing he was given as a child and the spirituality that he's trying to put together for himself. And one of the things that he said is, you know, I really don't buy what the fundamentalists say. I don't buy that literal interpretation. I don't think they understand the history of religion. I really, intellectually, I get that. But there's this little kid inside of me who's still thinking that there's a God up there who's going to zap me for disagreeing. So a lot of us are programmed by society, by past religious experiences, to believe some of this hocus-pocus garbage with regard to what paranormal phenomena is really all about. Laura couldn't find any support either. That's the other thing that we saw with her email. After her ex's passing, she had this powerful after-death communication with him, but as is common with most of us, she was not prepared for it. Yes, everyday people, they have these experiences, and who in the heck are they supposed to talk to? They just don't know who to talk to. If we as a society have been taught not to trust our own premonitions, how will we ever develop that sixth sense we all inherently possess? How can we? Well, premonitions are nothing new, not at all. The third and last wife of Julius Caesar had a premonition. I mean, you can read any historical piece of literature, whether it's the Bible, the Torah, historical religion, historical history, historical cultures, and you will find instances of premonitions. They married in 59 BC with no children resulting from the union. Supposedly, this woman had a premonition of her husband's murder and tried to warn him in vain. In Shakespeare's play, she has a dream that a statue of Caesar is flowing with blood as many Romans wash their hands in the blood. She also encouraged Brutus to send word to the Senate that Caesar was sick on the day of his death, I guess obviously, so that he wouldn't, like, show up. But Caesar refused to tell a lie. Following Caesar's death, she delivered all of Caesar's personal papers, including will and notes, and his most precious possessions to Mark Antony, one of the new leaders of Rome, and she never remarried after his death. So she has this premonition. She has this very strong premonition that something bad is going to happen, but nobody listens to her. So you may say to yourself, that happened in the Dark Ages when humans were superstitious, not as worldly and sophisticated as we are today. Oh, you think so? Okay, well, here is a modern-day case. Okay, there was a guy named, his last name was Knife, I don't know what his last name was, but they're calling him the Knife Man. This is from the Daily Mail out of London, England. And his victim, she had a premonition of her murder. Jury hears how twin put up a brave fight for life after sex attacker pounced. He pounced on her. So she had a premonition before this happened. And this was written by Ben Taylor. An identical twin murdered as she walked her dog in a park had a premonition that she would meet a violent death, a court heard yesterday. Ann Cook was so terrified that she carried a lock knife to protect herself. So here she's having this deathbed vision, this premonition. She used the weapon when Leon Amos pounced on her and attempted to rape her, the jury at Reading Crown Court was told. But despite punching him in the face and blackening his eye, the petite 35-year-old was no match for her powerfully built attacker who plunged a 6-inch kitchen knife into her heart, and he left her dying. Now, that's a really sad premonition. How many of you also know that JonBenet Ramsey's mother, Patsy, had a premonition of her own daughter's death? Now, when this happened, I've spent a lot of time in Boulder, and I used to stay right down the street from this, from where this real sad, tragic murder took place. And oh my God, what a zoo that was back then. But on the Jeff Rentz Radio website, in an article by Vincent Bridges and Jay Widener, which reviewed the Ramsey's tell-all book, Innocent Murder, The Real Story of JonBenet's Death, we read a peek at the new book in the Star tabloid for the week of March 7th reveals that Patsy had two strange premonitions of disaster in the days before Christmas. Remember, her daughter was murdered around Christmas. The first involved a look-alike doll that Patsy gave JonBenet as a Christmas present. Seeing it in its wrapping suggested to Patsy what she saw was JonBenet in her coffin. That's pretty strong stuff. The second premonition was more subtle but goes directly to the heart of the case. Patsy claimed that she liked the purple of the Easter vestments and chose to use purple as her Christmas tree colors that year. In the book, Patsy reveals that she realizes now she had unconsciously introduced death into the Christmas celebration by using the color that signifies Christ's sacrifice rather than his birth. Okay, so she's, you know, this is imprinted on her. All of a sudden she's finding meaning in some of her own strange behavior. So let's look at the definition of a premonition more closely, because I think a lot of us get real confused. An online encyclopedia of the occult, mysticism, magic, paranormal, and more, the Mystica, that's a great place to go to, you guys, if you want some really good definitions of some of this stuff. Premonition is a type of prophecy consisting of an impressionable warning of a future event. The phenomenon is characterized by such sensations, now listen, as anxiety, drumroll please, uneasiness, a vague feeling of disquiet suggesting impending disaster, to actual visual or auditory visions. They're using the word hallucination. I don't like that word. Premonition is sometimes referred to as a gut-level feeling. Now, for all of you moms who are sitting out there and you've got that, you know, mama worry wart deal, your kid gets his driver's license, gets into a car, you wave sadly as he drives off into the sunset, and all of a sudden you have a vision of him being dead on the side of the road, that's called mama worry. That's that's not a premonition. That's not what we're talking about. The sensation tends to occur prior to disasters, deaths, and other traumatic and emotionally charged events. The sensation of premonition may be considered precognition at times because there is no clear-cut line between them. However, generally, premonitions are sense-oriented, dominated by a syndrome of physical uneasiness, depression, or distress that is without discernible source or reason. Years ago, I was up in Taos, New Mexico. Stuart Wilde, who has written, he's written some pretty interesting books, he was running a workshop, and they were having a firewalk session. And so Michael and I, we went up there to go see the relatives and do a little skiing, and then we decided to participate in this. And after the firewalking, which was very interesting, I started feeling really strange. I started feeling really sad and weepy and depressed and upset. And I thought, well, maybe I just blew my adrenals walking on all those doggone hot coals. And, of course, you know, if you do firewalk properly, the mind is a wonderful thing. Your feet will be fine. There's nothing mystical or strange about it. There's all kinds of science to explain it. But I thought, you know, maybe the stress of that. But I did. I just got so emotional. And the next morning, we received a phone call saying that my husband's father, I mean uncle, had passed away. Now, I've also had that when my mother-in-law passed and my father-in-law passed and my own mother passed. So that sense of physical uneasiness, depression, or distress. And there, you can't find a reason for it. It is an unexplainable feeling that something is going to happen. Precognition, on the other hand, is more precise, involving visions or a dream of event that is to occur in the future. And I have had those, too. We're going to talk a little bit more about those in a couple of weeks. For some investigators, premonitions can include actions of patients and individuals, oh, brother, in magnetic and mediumistic trances who prophesize that their that some terrible event to them will occur within a certain period of time, and may subconsciously wish to fulfill that prophecy. Okay, so we got the skeptics. They stepped in here, and they're going to explain away premonitions by saying they are self-fulfilled prophecies. But let's just, you know, I'm curious. Let's read some more of this stuff. It might be questioned whether the similar phenomena might occur in a dream or a hallucination. This is theorized on the conclusion that a post-hypnotic person generally weaves his actions into the surrounding circumstances, even though the very moment of its performance may have been fixed months before. Therefore, this raises the possibility that fulfillment of dreams and hallucinations might be suggested through telepathic communication to a person from another agent, which may not be far-fetched or impossible. So, you know, we got the whole implanting in our minds. As someone who does a lot of what's called regression therapy with patients, there is a way to do that that's very safe, very productive. I think that most of us are pretty sharp. We're not, if we have a premonition, chances are it's not because somebody's implanted it in our mind. Of course, the skeptics go on. Another consideration is coincidence. The dream or hallucination of an event could possibly coincide with the incident. Also, it is impossible that impressions, whether they remain vague forebodings or are embedded in dreams, must at times be subconscious inferences drawn from an actual, if obscured, perception of existing facts. Such premonitions are by no means to be disregarded. Now, to a degree, okay, I have to kind of agree with this. I do have to agree with some of this. However, frequently premonitions, no matter how impressive, prove to be absolutely groundless. That's just not true. It's not true. Let's see here. I'm going to skip some of this stuff because I want to get to some really interesting premonitions. In 1948, the prominent Soviet psychic Wolf Messing traveled to, Ashgabat, to give some demonstrations of his abilities. Prior to his performance, as he walked the streets of the city, he was seized with a terrible dread and an intense desire to leave as soon as possible. He canceled his performances, the only time he had ever done so in his life, and left. 3 days later, there was a massive earthquake which leveled Ashgabat, killing 50,000 people. Messing's premonition saved his life. However, he had no specific forewarning of the earthquake. Okay, so there's one of those experiences, a premonition. There's that sense. He doesn't have, it's not precognition where he knows what's going to happen, but there's like a premonition that something's not right. So do you guys get this? A premonition is a sense that something's not right. On October 26, 1966, 28 adults and 116 children were killed when a landslide of coal waste tumbled down a mountain in Wales and buried a school. According to three surveys taken afterwards, up to 2 weeks before the disaster, about 200 people experienced both premonitions and precognitions. The premonitions included depression, a feeling that something bad was going to happen. Some people accurately pinpointed the day. Sensations of choking and gasping for breath, uneasiness, and impressions of coal dust, billowing black clouds, and children running and screaming. Okay, so those are the precognitions that people had about this disaster. Premonitions occur in a waking state, are more predominant. Isn't that interesting? Than those that occur in dreams, because in the latter they are frequently disguised as symbols. That's why I always tell you guys, write your dreams down. If you have a really strange dream that just leaves you feeling seriously uneasy and overwhelmed and emotional, open up your day planner or one of those BlackBerry things or your pocket schedule deal, but make a notation of that. Make a notation of the day, the time, and what it was you did dream. However, when these symbols frequently reappear in dreams, the individuals may learn to recognize distinguishing symbols or emotional tones. Premonitions can give early intuitive warnings that frequently, but are too subtle to register on the conscious mind. Some of these intuitive warnings apparently register on the subconscious and cause the person to unknowingly alter his plans, which some evidence indicates. So I guess what I'm trying to say to you is that instead of poo-pooing premonitions and precognition, we can use these to our benefit. This is about trusting our sixth sense, using it and incorporating it into our lifestyle. In the 1960s, W.F. Cox examined passenger loads on trains involved in accidents between 1950 and 1955. By comparing the number of passengers on the train the day of the accident to the number of passengers on the same train for the preceding 7 days, the preceding 14th day, and the 28th day, he found that on some accident days, but not all, there was a dramatic decrease in passengers. Doesn't that just make you shiver a little bit? So what this guy is saying is that on accident days, the closer the date was to the actual accident that the train had, there were less passengers. One example was the Chicago and East Illinois, Georgia. It just had 9 passengers on the accident day of June 15, 1952, whereas 5 days before it carried a more typical 62 passengers. Have you guys ever, like, listened to the news and there has been something just terrible happen in the news and you hear, well, the family wasn't there when the plane hit their house or the car drove into their bedroom? Cox concluded that many of those intending to travel the disaster-bound trains had unconsciously altered their plans or missed the trains by being late. My cousin was supposed to be at the Twin Towers on the day that we were attacked, 9/11, and he had an important business meeting that he was supposed to attend, and at the last minute, he decided not to go. And I have heard stories, accounts of that over and over and over again, and in 2 weeks we're going to look at that more closely. Okay, a similar circumstance may relate to doomed ships. Now, I included some of this information in A Glimpse of Heaven. The Titanic, this is very interesting, the Titanic carried only 58% of its passenger load on its disastrous maiden voyage when colliding with an iceberg on April 1912. How many of you people knew that? See, all this information is right there. It's right out there for us to take a look at. But most of us don't know where to go to look for it, and that's my job. That's why I'm here, to give you guys information so that you can make decisions for yourself about paranormal phenomena. A group of 22 stokers were late, and the captain declared the ship would sail without them, a fact which may have saved their lives. The psychiatrist, Ian Stevenson, here's somebody else. Y'all need to go read his research. He has done research on reincarnation, premonitions, all sorts of interesting stuff. Ian, capital I-A-N, Stevenson, S-T-E-V-E-N-S-O-N. Recorded more than 19 incidents of premonitions and precognitions concerning the Titanic in England, America, Canada, and Brazil, which occurred within 2 weeks prior to the ship's sailing date of April 10th. So basically, he found 19 incidences of premonitions and precognitions. I have some of those documented in my book. Very, very interesting reading. Some canceled their reservations after dreaming of the ship's doom. Others said it was bad luck to sail on a ship's maiden voyage. Some of the survivors, now listen to this, said they had felt uneasy but sailed anyway. The later is questionable because some sensation might have been prompted by after-the-fact thought, which, yeah, we got to take that into consideration, too. Okay, following the Aberfan disaster, a British Premonition Bureau was established in January 1967 to collect and screen early warnings in an effort to prevent disasters. Okay, so there was a disaster that took place, and because of the premonitions predicting this particular disaster, someone decided to set up a premonition bureau. A year later, the Central Premonition Bureau was established in New York for the same purpose. Both bureaus did not progress too far because of low budgets, poor public relations, and too much inaccurate information. So, you know, if you want to, you can actually surf the web, and you'll find some of these premonition bureaus, they're out there. People collect premonitions. The functioning of premonitions is not exactly known. That is why some people possess them while others do not. One theory is that some people are more open or prone to psychic suggestion. The cause for the diminishing of this psychic ability in people is that a larger portion of the population has become less intuitive. How many of you, you meet somebody for the first time, you just don't trust them. You don't trust them. Your guts are telling you, run in the opposite direction. But instead, you invite them over to dinner, you give them your house key, and before you know it, they rip you off and steal you blind. We don't in this country. We don't trust our intuition. With the advancement of the scientific age, people began to rely less on their sensations. It is just in recent years that science has begun investigating the importance of human intuition and sensation. So, are there modern-day seers whose predictions really do come true? Well, I want to introduce you to somebody, and I hope you'll go and you'll buy his books and check him out on the web. My friend Chris Robinson is one of these guys. He is such a character. He contacted me a few years ago right after One Last Hug came out, and he lives in England. His name is Chris Robinson. Go ahead and plug him into your search engine there. And he had been feeling very frustrated that no one in the States was taking he or his premonition seriously. So here are some transcripts. This is just going to break it down for you real quick because we're almost running out of time. But here is information that Chris shared on a television show in London, ITV1. Let's see. Chris says that many things in his dreams are symbolic. Chris now has worked with Scotland Yard, y'all. Y'all need to know this. Dogs are terrorists, fish are terrorists that are about to be caught, and the snow means something is imminent and dangerous. Basically, Chris is the type of individual who would go to Scotland Yard when he would dream about a crime. He would have a dream about a crime. So he told one of his dreams to a deputy sergeant who was skeptical at first, but on talking to the police decided to go ahead and take down the details. A month later, a bomb went off, so he had a premonition of a bomb. The terrorists had entered the grounds by an adjacent graveyard, and Chris had dreamed all of this. The next case looked at photographer Dan Eldon, who was taking photos of the Somalian war. Chris warned his mother, Kathy, that according to his dream, Dan was in trouble. This was before any journalist had been killed. Various things came to him in his dream, such as F4, salt water, seaside, and four dead photographers. It turned out that he was killed near the sea with three other photographers, and the day before he had been taking photographs near a beach with an F4 lens. The third example involved dreams where Chris dreamed airplanes were crashing and pilots were being ejected with parachutes. Chris did some research into this and found there was an upcoming air show. He drove there to the air show and was just in time to see two planes crash and the pilots ejecting with parachutes. This wasn't hindsight, gang. Chris knew exactly where to go. Chris Robinson now helped Kathy Eldon, the mother of this one person who was killed in Somalia, communicate with her son to help her find missing photographs. So today, how does Chris feel about the media's portrayal of the paranormal? In his short, to-the-point article, The Media Versus Bullshit, we read, psychic ability is something the media wants to profit from, but at the same time, deny exists. It seems a strange situation. Newspapers and magazines make huge profits from horoscopes and tarot card telephone lines on the one hand, but want to rub psychics out on the other. Is this acceptable? How many of us notice this is what is happening all over the Western world? It is the case that greed is all that is being considered here. Money, 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 money. And truth and understanding have gone out the window. British radio and TV say they are not allowed by law to broadcast programs about psychics or mediums without having the skeptical side also put forth. At the end of the Colin Fry show, which is a big show in the UK, The Sixth Sense, we are told that not everyone believes in mediums, and the show is for entertainment only. I remember Chris was hot about this, yet we are not told this at the end of Stars or Sunday or any other religious program. Why is this? It is discrimination, and we only see it in the connection with psychic programs. Should we not see it with religious programs? Who is it that has decided this? Is it some media moguls? So is the media dictating what the paranormal looks like, and if so, are we buying it? In 2 weeks, gang, we will look more closely at some of Chris's fascinating modern-day premonitions, some of which had to do with 9/11, and they were heartbreaking. Along with this, we will explore modern-day premonitions of everyday people as they relate to world events. Don't miss this show. You don't have to be a psychic with your own television program or book to be psychic. Everyday people just like you are encountering glimpses of world events to come. So, gang, join me in 2 weeks as we wade through the fakes, the phonies, the religious freaks, Hollywood, and the true blue experiences of folks just like you. Trusting your premonitions, gang, it isn't that hard. Start writing them down. You don't have to shell out $500 for a house blessing, $200 to $300 for a seat in a large auditorium to listen to a self-proclaimed medium, nor do you need to call the psychic hotline and pay $2 per minute for a reading. Learning to trust your own premonitions is easy. Until then, gang, as usual, it's been a pleasure being here with you. I'm going to encourage all of you for the next 2 weeks to be aware of those times when you are feeling uncomfortable, uneasy, when you are sensing a premonition, sensing precognition. Write it down. If you have had an unusual paranormal experience, email me at drsbrandon@sbc.net. And be sure to tune in to the many other fine radio programs available to you here on BBS. Gang, this is Dr. Carla Wills Brandon. Sleep deep, sleep tight, and dream well.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.